when we were there, it was just fried, man. It was just like the first game, match day minus one, we did a walkthrough of the stadium. I was doing so much, so it was like crazy. And I remember we were doing that walkthrough of that first stadium, and I remember they were just like, try and get like a very good clip of someone. And I was like, it has to be Atiba. So I was following Atiba, and like I have a good relationship with Atiba as well. And I remember I have the video, I'll show you it after. And it's literally him, like we're walking through the tunnel and he looks back at me and he's like, it's time. And like, you know, Atiba in his like, okay, like skinny, slender man, like big, like just like his aura, he looked back at me and I just had to do everything in my power to be like, oh, I'm working here. I can't respond as like a friend or as someone. And then we just walk through and it's just,
it opens up.
And I was like, holy cow.
Was that your like welcome to the World Cup moment, or was there another moment that like
every single time, every single thing was a welcome to the World Cup moment? Yeah, no, it was just like an insane experience. And again, being one of the only, like being one of the younger ones in that World Cup as like a media, being one of the only black ones out there as well. It was crazy.
All right, welcome everybody to episode 11 of the Sports Creative Showcase. Today we have a very special guest coming all the way from Vancouver, Tagua Moyo. Said that one? All
perfect.
Right. I'm two for two now in the last few episodes of properly pronouncing names. You are arguably one of the more recognizable names in the Canadian soccer storytelling landscape. Tagua is an incredibly talented photographer, the founder and editor-in-chief for Darby. You are now the FIFA or EA Sports FC, because that's what you guys are calling it now?
FC.
FC, community manager at EA Sports, and you can pretty much find this guy at any soccer like footy sideline in the country. You've been essential in documenting major moments in Canadian soccer history. You take unbelievable photos and do great work for both the men's and women's national teams. You work with all three Canadian MLS teams. You do work with the Premier League, the Canadian Premier League. And last November, he got to go to the 2022?
It was weird. It was like a COVID thing.
Yeah. Well, you got like, to go to the World Cup last year, which is no easy feat before 30 years old. Something that you mentioned before this podcast is a bucket list item, was a bucket list item for you.
Yeah.
And I'm sure for many other people, including myself, getting to shoot something like that would be an unbelievable opportunity. I just rambled a lot about you, but I wanted to welcome you to the show, give a little intro to everything you've done. What's going on? What have you been up to lately? How are you doing? You just got off a flight this morning.
Yeah.
You're here after taking a red eye from Vancouver and hopping on this right away. How are you doing?
First of all, I need like that, just like that last 30 second clip. I need to wake up to that on like bad days where I'm just like having a terrible time. But no, I'm excited to be here. Two for two on the names, Lucas and my name, back to back. I don't know what you were thinking for yourself there. Too difficult.
If you go back to the early episodes of the podcast, I'm like absolutely horrible with names. So now I make a point of it. I'm like, I'm asking you the morning of, so it's fresh in my mind. So you've obviously had a pretty crazy last 2 years, I would say. And, you know, in general, really busy last 5 years with Darby and how much you guys have grown. What's the last calendar year been like for you? Give us a little snippet. You know, this time last year, November, you were in Qatar.
Yeah.
We don't have crazy to dive right into that right off the bat, but you know, what have the last 12 months been like for you?
Yeah, no, the last 12 months in comparison to, I feel like, the previous, like, 2-3 years, 12 months has been very different. Just because, like, I really purposely and not purposely, like, shot a lot less in it for the most part. Been doing a lot of just, like, I guess you could say scheming, a lot of plotting, a lot of planning for the future for shooting. So it's been good. It was nice because I forget who I was talking to, but I was just, like, it's been nice to, like, this summer, I think I went 3 months without shooting anything or carrying even a camera. Like there was a point where I think I just got tired of it.
Yeah.
So like this last like 12 months of like, obviously I really wanted to shoot more than I did. But it was also really good to just like, literally I would go to like soccer games, like Whitecaps games or VFC games, and literally just watch with zero intention on.
And that's such a nice change from when you're used to just capturing it all the freaking time and sitting back and like actually enjoying the sport you love, is especially when you do what we do, is such a different experience.
For real. Cause like especially cause I've been shooting since 2013 really nonstop when I started at Ryerson. Sorry, Toronto Met.
I still call it Ryerson.
Yeah,
but I'm a Ryerson. My degree says Ryerson.
I'm not paying to change it either. I'm not doing that. I'm not. So like ever since I kind of started there, just in the jump and just was like shooting nonstop. So like really like this year, not shooting nearly as much as I thought I would, especially coming out of the World Cup, was nice. Like, I didn't know it would be this nice and necessary. And now that I'm like getting back into shooting and getting back into the rhythm of things, and like I have a big trip coming up that I'm going to be shooting a lot. And Canada camps are going to come quick and fast coming up. I'm excited to like shoot again.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, I mean, I kind of experienced the same thing this past summer, just having the first time off in a long time. Mm-hmm. And I know what that hustle is, especially having a very similar path going to Ryerson, TMU, whatever you want to call it, and then kind of not stopping. So it's really nice to hear that I'm not the only one.
What are your thoughts on the name change and like the bold? It's bold, right?
Bold.
Yeah, I hate it. Without getting canceled.
It
was right to change it.
It was right to change it. I don't know about the team name Bold, but I mean, you know, I think the jerseys look nice. I think the visual rebrand looks nice. I got nothing else to say. I identify, you know, I'm always going to say I'm a Ram.
Ramley is so lit.
Yeah, Ramley, like, you know, I was there with the Rams. I ended my career there as a creative when they were still Rams.
Okay, yeah.
So I don't, it's also weird because, you know, when I go back to watch games just for fun or see like a few friends that are still in school, like everyone I know is gone. Like it's a completely different environment.
Yeah.
So Ramley is still, you know, I'm still, but I, you know, I think it works and they have to do it, like you said. But no, it's awesome to hear that you've been taking a lot of time off before it gets to crazy season. Let's go along with the lines of Ryerson and just kind of dive back in time for a little bit. Give me a little background on how you started off as a photographer, because, you know, before we dive into the World Cup and Derby and everything you've done, I always like to give a little insight for everyone watching on how people got started in this line of work, you know, what your origin story, for lack of a better word, is. Kind of, you know, whether it was at Ryerson or whether it was before, how did you kind of get into this lane of being a creative in the sports scene?
Yeah, no, I think it started really before university. I had a really great teacher in high school, my careers teacher, shout out to Mr. Hickey, rest in peace, who he changed my life for the better. He like, I was always like, I was an athlete, a high level athlete, but I was never like, oh, he's league bound, you know? Like,
yeah.
You knew, I was always good, but I was never like that next level. And like I was always like I was a big liar. I still am, but like I like to tell stories.
You're
and
a storyteller. Yeah, that's how you put yourself.
And the teacher noticed that, and he's like, "Hey, why don't you do something with this?" Because he's like, "I don't think you're gonna make it as a professional soccer player or basketball player." I was 5'5" at the time, especially. And so he was like, "Let's do this like student sports newspaper kind of thing." And I did that, and I was writing, taking photos, designing everything. And my parents got me a camera for that like co-op. It was like a special co-op. And like my favorite part of it was like the photo aspect. And I started like taking photos for the stories, but then I'd also just start bringing my camera around with me most places I went. My homies and I would play basketball out front. I would just bring my camera and pretend to make it look like we were like NBA cover stars. So that's kind of how it started. And then when I went to a Ryerson, I went there for journalism, and I like quickly realized I hated writing, but I love storytelling, and I got African parents, so it's like I didn't really want to like drop out, or I didn't know how to tell them like I don't think this journalism thing's for
me. You have immigrant parents coming from someone who's like from Colombia and like came like I'm a proper immigrant. Like I know it's like you don't want to be like, hey, I'm thinking about like
getting
because there's a whole other standard when you're growing up in another country. It's completely different from something we're used to here.
Exactly. And I was blessed that my parents paid for my tuition, so I was like, all right, so I just got to figure this out. So like it was like second weekend, third weekend, I went to it's still called the Eye Opener, and it was like our student newspaper there.
I remember the Eye Opener. Yeah, I know a lot of people. Them. Yeah, for sure.
I owe a lot to them. And I just went in and I was like, hey, I'm a first year. I love sports. I have a camera. And they were like, okay, do you like soccer? I'm like, I love it. They're like, all right, men and women play. But it's kind of far. And
it's Downsview. It's like literally in the middle. We were just talking about like how teams in north of Toronto who are trying to establish himself. Like, it's a tough commute.
It's hard.
It's easy to go east west. It's not easy to go north in the city. It takes you forever to get out anywhere in the city that way.
Yeah. So I was doing that, and then that's when I kind of like fell in love with photography again. I was writing the stories and also taking photos. And like, I was having fun writing the stories because it was soccer related, it was sports related. But like, for me, it was like, I was like, holy cow, like I can do so much more with just this one image or two images that I take than anything that I'm writing. You know, like, at least for me in my brain, I was like, I can like a goal. And it's not even like someone kicking the ball, but it was like those like just in between moments, like little weird things that I look for, like breathing, or like when players are talking to each other, just like subtle details. I was like, I feel
the
like
moments in between.
Yeah. I was like, this is way better. This gets me more hype than anything writing. So then from then on, I was like, all right, this is what I want to do. And that was a hard conversation telling my parents I want to be a photographer, African parents, and then a sports photographer. But yeah, no, it's just kind of been a crazy ride. And that's kind of how it got started ever since, like since 2013, shooting like the men's and women's Ryerson Rams soccer games at
from Ryerson to the world, man.
Come on, you
that's
know
that's crazy. And
you
and
know,
there's a,
I shot Luke. It's crazy. I shot Lucas McNaughton when he was playing for U of T, and then me and him were both in Qatar.
That's
tell me
crazy.
How crazy that
no,
was,
I,
bro.
And I think that speaks to the quality of people that come out of like the Ryerson mm-hmm. kind of pool.
He was U of T, to be fair,
but
unfortunately,
even in Toronto, like the
second
the
best school
the talent
in the city.
Pool. Yeah, at least yeah, like the talent pool in the city is ridiculous, and I think it just shows that like people like you'll run into people again. In a completely different scenario than
literally
you but I related a lot to that story from you know the immigrant parents having mm-hmm. to tell them hey I want to be a photographer
yeah.
To the whole kind of idea of you know kind of from the start being that guy with the camera that you bring around with your buddies and stuff. What was your first camera?
It was the classic Rebel T3 Rebel, not T3i, T3 Rebel.
I never got a Rebel, so I'm not part of that generation of photographers because I started.
Maybe
a
I'm
little,
aging myself a little bit.
But I think most people I've talked to and just know it's like, oh, it's one of the Rebel series, like for
yeah.
sure. No, I love kind of the.
I still have it.
You're gonna keep the give that to
yeah,
your kids
I'm,
one day.
Yeah, no, it's like that's it's got goal. A massive dent in the screen. I have all
that
of
seen,
my.
That thing's seen shit.
Yeah, I've. bro, I have all of my cameras that like I've used. I mean, film cameras I break and I don't keep them. Some of them, but like I have like my Rebel, then my next camera, and now my next two that I've been using.
That's awesome. We'll get into camera gear a little later. Obviously, you know, in the creative scene, everyone tells you to find a niche.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in sports, it's even more convoluted because it's like you have to find a niche within that niche, which is like choose a sport. Obviously, myself, like I work in hockey. That's kind of what people know me for. You are very much entrenched in the football or soccer world. We're going to call it football from now on because mm-hmm. I'm Latino and that's just what it is.
Come
for
on.
Me. So in when it comes to football, that's kind of been your thing and your brand forever. What led you to want it? Like, you know, you obviously probably grew up with it, but what's your relationship like with the sport and how did it obviously influence you to kind of take it on full head like you have over the last few years?
Yeah, no, it's kind of funny because like you said, it's true. You have to pick a niche. You can't like, especially with social media now, you have to pick a niche, I feel like, where it's either you can't do everything. As much as you want to, you know, like for me, full transparency, basketball was my first love.
Okay, cool.
You know, and
I've
growing
never
up,
seen any of your basketball.
Yeah,
I've never seen
yeah,
you post a basketball.
Growing up in Ontario, growing up in Toronto, like NBA, that's what I wanted to do.
Raptors,
shooting that. But I've always also played soccer at a very high level. Again, African parents, shout out to my parents, Zimbabwean to be exact. My dad is a football fanatic. So that was always on. I was always playing it. And in university, I was just trying to figure my life out. And I was like, all right, the Raptors are popping off right now. Everyone is trying to shoot the Raptors. This was like 2015, 2016, right before like it was really popping off.
Yeah.
But like the whole We the North, Pound the Rock, everyone was excited.
Like it was that birth of like the identity of the Raptors as we know it today.
Exactly. So, but I was like, okay, in all reality, I'm this little kid in second year university. I can't see it. Shout out to Keyshawn because me and him are similar age and he's made it and he's been able to shoot all of that stuff, and it's great. But I was like, I don't think I can do that because it was already so clustered. So I'm like, I love soccer. I've been a massive fan of soccer since the 2010 World Cup. That was like my entry level.
South
like,
Africa, right?
I'm not one of those fans who were like, oh, I've been a fan since Beckham and made his... I'd be real with it.
You know, yeah. I've been a fan probably roughly since 2012, 2010 era. Like, I'm not going to own that I watched back in the 90s, but I was a fucking kid, yeah. So but
the Derby team, like I have a shout out to Jisoo, shout out to AK, Kessia. They always rip me because they'll be like talking about something and I'll be like,
Bro, I don't know.
If it was pre-20, like really honestly,
at least you're honest with it though, you know?
2010, like, because South Africa, again, the World Cup, that was like first time me seeing my culture like on television with the beautiful game. And I was like, oh, like the vuvuzelas, the facial paint that the South African fans were having. That,
the first goal they scored in the tournament.
The first goal, the dances, everything. I was like, yo, this sport is kind of real swaggy.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize that, so.
That's kind of like for me very similarly. Like, my dad's a huge footy guy, Colombian growing up. That's all we get down there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I got into it around 2010, 2012. But it wasn't until 2014 for me that I really got invested because Colombia kind of had their coming up party.
James
is like a legend in circles in this. And so very much the same, like Everton legend. I'm a Liverpool fan. So you didn't know that, did you?
You probably rightfully didn't tell me until just now. Yeah, but probably wouldn't be here.
I'm joking. No, but like same kind of idea, like seeing that, like your people and your culture excel instantly like elevates them, that sport in your mind. So I 100% get where you're coming from there. And I love that kind of connection that you had with it. I also love the fact that you had kind of the mindset of saying, everyone's trying to shoot this like basketball. I'm going to try and do something different. Cause everyone thinks like, I think Toronto specifically, like everyone wants to shoot the Leafs or the Raptors or the big ticket item, but you pivoted really quickly. Mm-hmm. So how did you kind of get your start in shooting like higher level soccer? Obviously you started with Ryerson.
Yeah.
But how did you end up working your way into eventually shooting, you know, TFC and all the other higher levels of footy in the city?
Yeah, no, I'm a very annoying person, and in this industry you have to be very annoying.
Yep, persistence.
Persistent is probably a better word. And so when I was in Ryerson, one of my good buddies, Mitchell Tierney, who I call Mr. Canada Soccer, because he's just like, he's been doing this and writing about it and like been super passionate about Canadian soccer culture since I don't even know when. You know, this guy just knows so much.
Eats, breathes, and sleeps it.
Yeah, and he was working for, at the time, Waking the Red. Shout out to them, RIP SB Nation.
I used to write for an SB Nation blog, RIP, yeah, man. I know that feel.
Like, it really hurts. I lost so many photos because I was a stupid and I didn't save anything. Oh. And I thought the website was forever, bro.
Save your photos. Yeah. The internet is not forever. Biggest, it's a lie.
It was pain. But I kept messaging him and was like, at first, it was just like, hey, man, let me, like, whatever you do, whenever you need, like, let me shoot this game. Let me shoot this game. Let me shoot a 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 game. Literally for, like, from 2013 to 2016. And obviously, like, he wasn't not letting me because, like, he didn't want to. It was just, like, he was starting out getting that. So it was, like,
how am I supposed to give you that if I don't even know how to get it for me? Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't want it to seem like he was just like dogging me, but it's just like literally he was trying, and then finally like near 2016, near the end of that season, I was able to kind of shoot some Canada national team games back when we were getting like 5,000 to 8,000 in the stands, which is crazy.
Dogged on the field,
yeah,
competition,
getting absolutely rinsed. And then the 2017 season was my first full season, nice. Like I'd say as like a professional football photographer, and it was like the best season because it was when TFC won it all, and Montreal and Vancouver can never talk to us about that because you guys don't have a star on your kit. But anyways, because I get it from everybody, bro. I get it from everyone because TFC were so bad right now. I know you said I came from Vancouver, but I'm Toronto is home. So yeah, I just got to shoot TFC through Waking the Red from 2016, the end of 2016 season till I think I moved out to Vancouver. So like 2020, I was shooting for Waking the Red, and then I started shooting MLS, and then I started shooting like
and it's just survival, a wave from there.
It's just like you do enough stuff, and like back in the day, especially too, like with Instagram. Remember, you were posting like I remember 2013.
Yo, Instagram 20, was 2013 different back
to
then.
2018. If you weren't posting three times a day, bro, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing? Like I was showing you
doing the white borders, come all on, that jazz.
Everything, bro. Everything. Next level look.
Kids these days will never know Instagram.
They will never know, bro. Like all the rooftops that I'm seeing now, it's like y'all kids will never know, bro. That the ice building. Come on, I never made it up to that one, but I was a week too late. But yeah, no, that's kind of, I ramble, sorry. No,
it's all good. This is what a podcast is.
But no, it was just like I started shooting Waking the Red, and that's when I was like, oh, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Like,
that's awesome.
I knew going into Ryerson that the World Cup and the Olympics were like the two Mount Rushmores that I wanted to cover in any capacity. And then once I started shooting, I was like, okay, this is how I want to get there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was just like working my butt off. Like I was doing Ryerson Ram games and then rushing back to BMO to shoot and just absolutely loving life.
Your story kind of effectively tells something I want to make a future video about and talk about, is that you don't need to go to teams and leagues to work, to find work necessarily. Mm-hmm. You went to a publication, a digital, a blog for better.
A small publication.
A small publication, you know, like.
The biggest at the same time.
So, but you kind of are showing through that story. I think you're making a really good point to, like I said, you don't need to find a job with TFC or find a job with your local MLS team, or if you're in Europe, like you can do it with publications, whether digital, whether print, whatever it has to be. There are other ways of getting into the building and through the door of shooting sports at a professional level. Speaking of publications, I'm gonna now go on towards your brainchild, Darby. Right on the hat, you see that? Shameless self-promotion. All the links for them will be down in the description below.
Darby Mag.
You went from shooting for Waking the Red and finding all these connections. And again, people often think that you have to find work with a team or a league to get into this industry. You went down a completely different roadmap and effectively said, fuck it, I'm going to start my own magazine and my own publication. And Darby came out of that. Give us, for those who don't know, how the idea behind, well, tell me what Darby's about, and then tell me about how the actual idea was born and how you guys got to where you are today.
Yeah, nah, Darby is just always changing. Darby came about from me being in my fourth year of university. I was doing an internship at TSN as like a chase producer or a web producer or something like that, and I absolutely hated it. And I was just like, I wanted, like, this is like storytelling and journalism and sports journalism, specifically around soccer, is what I want to do. I know that's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And there was already rumblings of like 2026 coming, you know? So I was like, I want to be able to tell stories of here, because it's like, you look at England,
that's the culture.
There's soccer Bible, there's Mundial, there's everything. You look at America, there's 8x8, there's Venice Beach, there's Saturday's football, there's all of these community cultural entities. And I'm like, all right, let me look at Canada now. So I started doing research, and I found people like Ringleaders, you know, in Vancouver there was a collective called Gastown FC who were a thing, and I was like, yo, this is dope, but nobody knows about this. So then I pitched these ideas to like Soccer Bible, Copa 90, and like shout out to them, because like they trusted me and like they gave me a lot of work, and like I was shooting a lot of Canadian stuff, but at the same time, they didn't really want stuff unless it was Fonzie, Christine Sinclair,
the big names,
like TFC in the playoffs. So I was like, all right, this is cool, and I really love working with them, but I want to create something where people will be able to come to and see North American, but specifically Canadian culture. So that's kind of how Darby came to be. And it's funny, because initially I wanted Darby to be like a storefront, where it was like, okay, I want it to be like a hub where people can actually physically come and like get stuff. And can I swear?
Yeah. I've already dropped this. I think I dropped one shit before. Yeah,
I would get stuff. but then I would realize how expensive it was. So I'm like, you know what? I have this, I'm I was on, like, I had 3 weeks left, 4 weeks left. And I was like, I have this journalism degree. Let me make the most of it. So I reached out to Ryan Abrams, and he's co-founder, art director. Yeah. Every design that you see is by him. And I like literally we have the screenshot of the message. I was like, hey man, I'm working on this soccer thing. I need help with the logo. That's all. And I haven't let him go since. And that's kind of just been it.
And he came up with the word Mark.
Yeah, he can't. I just like, cause I was like, I don't know how I can't express things well. Like I can't speak like,
which is really ironic considering you're a storyteller and you can express things with your visual content.
Yeah,
so well.
Nah, it's fried, man. That's why I like it so much, you know, because it's like, okay, I can't like,
I don't know how to say it, but this is how I'm going
to
show it.
My sister hates talking to me because it takes me 10 minutes to land the plane, you know?
I love that saying. I use that too. Yeah, I'm going to say it.
It takes, it's like, she's like, can you just land already? I'm like, no.
I have to tell you every piece of the backstory.
Every piece. So yeah, no, like I don't even know where I'm at, but yeah, that's how Darby came to be. It was just kind of like, I knew there was a niche for Canadian storytelling. I knew there was a potential for the World Cup to be here, and I wanted to make sure that people knew about the ringleaders, people knew about guys like FC Coalsands nowadays, people knew about Ford City, people knew about Facile out in Mississauga, people knew about all of these dope Canadian cultural football entities and communities. So like that's why like it's hard when people ask me what Darby is, because like yes, we are a magazine, and yes, we're
your community.
Now, yeah, we're a community. We're like a brand, but like we don't have a specific, you know, we do magazines, we do events, we do everything. So
like you're a collective.
Yeah, we're a collective. We're a collective. So it's that's how Darby came to be. And yeah, it's
that's wild. Awesome, man. I love we have two kind of origin stories. Is yours is creative, and then the birth of what Darby is and what you're making it to be. And I think even in Toronto, like a lot of people like know who you guys are now, especially in the soccer scene. So it's really cool to see the growth that you guys have had. One thing that I want to talk about when it comes to Darby is that you guys have been able to create relationships from essentially a startup situation where you're just like texting your friend, like, hey, I want to do this soccer thing. And
I didn't even know him.
Yeah, and you shot your shot. But now you've kind of developed networks and relationships with so many organizations where you're doing amazing storytelling work, whether it's photo or writing. You guys are working with Canada Soccer, the Canadian MLS franchise, the Canadian Premier League, directly working with the biggest peaks of soccer in Canada. How did you develop those relationships and pitch Darby to like organizations like Canada Soccer to eventually come let you shoot the national team and things? How did you develop those relationships and kind of allow those to foster where you are now?
Yeah, no, I think just being there and being present is like the biggest thing that you can do. And also just like I saw in one of your videos, like just reach out to people, you know, like I have no fear ever in reaching out to someone and messaging someone, whether I'm asking them for a pass or how to get a pass or asking them just like a general question or just like following someone because I think they're cool or swaggy. You know, like I'm never afraid to reach out.
Shoot your shot.
Literally shoot or shoot. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
What I say is that like if you don't ask, the answer will literally always be no.
Exactly. Always. Yeah. So I was just always there, and like I built a relationship with some of the guys who are on the national team, and from there it would be like they would always use my photos, and then the Canada Soccer people would notice. The Canada Soccer works with Offside Creative as like their agency. So
I shot the game with Offside, so I'm very familiar with them.
Yeah, so Max is in tune with that, and he was like, hey man, would you like to shoot? So I started shooting there. And that's kind of how it got in. Once he gave me his contact, it was over for him because I was never gonna like leave him alone.
I think Max has that in common because I've been in his DMs and I've been texting him, and he actually called me yesterday. So same energy. I know what you're talking about.
So it's just kind of literally just being there, but it was just literally, I feel like also being a black young photographer, I know it's crazy because when I first started, I was young, and now there's like kids who are like 16, and I'm like, what the heck?
Versus like, back then, you're like 24, 23, and everyone there,
and like, everyone's like 60-year-old white dude.
Yeah.
So it's crazy being in this like middle area now, but it's like just kind of,
you're a trailblazer in the sense, I would say, you know, you're people see people like you, a young person, you know, even you like younger black photographers, like I'm sure they see you as a trailblazer. And I don't know if you ever thought about it that way, but you know, I think that's very much something you could, you know, that impact that you had on the culture, showing younger people that they can do it. Right.
Yeah, no, that's the biggest thing for me too. Right. Like that's also what pushed me to do it, because I wasn't seeing, and I still, it's better now, but you still don't see many people that look like us, you know, in these positions. So that was a big thing for me to be like, hey, I want to be able to like show, like I didn't know, like I wish I knew when I was 10 and 4 foot, like nothing, that, hey, there are other options that you can do and still be heavily involved with the sport that you love without being the athlete, you know, like so many black kids, so many immigrant kids, so many minority kids, they just think that the only way out for them is like literally to be that hooper, to be that,
That's a podcast fine. That's a fine. I'm kidding.
I saw it there too, when it was doing well. It was like,
oh yeah, mine hasn't gone off yet. I'm gonna put that in my pocket real quick.
But yeah, I wish I would have known. And that's why it's like so cool now that like, especially like every time, ever since I started shooting, like when little kids see me and like, they're like, high five. I know I'm just a photographer, and to them, it means nothing. But sometimes, you know, like if there's a little black girl, a little black boy, like Asian kid, like brown boy, and they see that, you know, they're like, oh wow, I didn't know I could do that. Mm-hmm. You know, because I didn't know. So it's that's what's inspiring to me and what I love the most about it.
It's just visibility. Being able to do that. It's what we talk about all the time. And obviously we were part of a generation, and you know, on my perspective, like being Colombian, I work in hockey.
Mm, yeah.
Name another Latino who works in hockey, bro.
Can't do it.
It's a predominantly white sport. Obviously not a lot of POCs, people working in the creative space. They're actually a really good amount, but in general in the sport,
it's front facing.
You don't ever see it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, I had the very much same idea. And I think you make a really good point that a lot of people can relate to. Like when you're an immigrant and you're coming from your home country, you think sport's the only way out. And I also wish that I knew that from a young age when I was playing hockey and when I was playing rugby and soccer, like, or football, that's soccer, Jesus. But like, I wish I saw that too. So I really, really relate. And I love the fact that like now you're taking an opportunity to kind of also like show this younger generation that like, hey, like you don't have to be the best player on the field to be here in the future. You can do it in so many avenues. And I think that's a really, really inspiring story. Kind of, cause I was actually going to touch on this just cause I relate to you just in my own field in hockey. What are there any challenges you've kind of faced in that sense, being like a younger photographer in this space? We know that age is a thing in the sports space, but also a young black photographer. Are there any challenges that you faced? And so, if so, like what have you done to kind of move past that?
Yeah, like especially when I first started, even now actually, I've experienced it like recently where people don't expect to see like someone like that looks like me. And like, I don't change the way I talk, the way I dress, anything. Obviously I'll like dress nicely, but like, I won't show up in a suit and tie ever. Cause that's not me. And I'm a photographer. Why the heck do I need to do that? So it's like, sometimes like I'll show up to like the media entrances in a hoodie, and like, obviously I won't be wearing like as baggy pants as I'm wearing right now, but like just like regular clothing. And I can tell security's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, oh, I'm a photographer. Open up my bag. They look in and see all the camera gear, and they're still like, no, but what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. Like that's happened to me like recently. I'm not going to say where, but like that's happened to me recently where I'm just like,
And what other proof do you want from me, man?
I literally have thousands of dollars of gear in here, and you're still going to press me. So like stuff like that happens a lot, has happened a lot in my career, whether I'm shooting NBA, whether I'm shooting NHL, whether I'm shooting soccer, whether I'm shooting anything, which is the unfortunate thing. But like, I'd rather like at least knock that door down and let those security guards know that, like, this isn't like I let them know after that too. I'm like, I'll see you later, you know, because you're not, this isn't going to be the last,
this ain't the last you see of me.
Like,
yeah.
you're going,
and you're
to
not doing
see
it in a disrespectful way. You're just doing it like, hey, like, now, you know,
yeah,
like, put some respect on my name and what you see.
Literally. So like, I feel like that's like the biggest thing. And then it's just maybe like opportunities, just like, because of, you know, even as simple as it being like my name, people might not, people are like, oh, they never knew how to say your name. So just say, hi, sir. Hi, how's it going?
Or just ask, say, hey, how do you say, you know, like what's your name? And then you get the pronunciation.
Yeah. So it's like just ignorant stuff like that has been difficult to deal with. But, you know, it's again, it's like, it's all part of the process. And if like I have to do that and other people, because I'm not the only black photographer, you know, I'm not the only minority photographer, but like, this is what we have to do to be able to be ringside, to be able to be pitch side, to be able to be all there and have all of the fans and people that are there to watch the game, but also the young kids see that, hey, we can do that. So it's like, it's pretty calm.
No, I love that. And I think you put it really bang on that. It's just something, it's part of the process that we have to deal with now. But mm-hmm. also at the same token, like we get to do, we're doing this now. So maybe down the future, the kid who's watching us won't have to do.
And the stuff
that
our parents had to deal with too, bro. Like, we can't even, like, I'm just complained about security letting
and
me
then,
in.
And then we're thinking about, yeah, our parents immigrating here. And like, yeah, we take that for granted. It's like, we're here in a completely different era. Like, I couldn't imagine doing this in my dad's era, like being in Canada, being a Colombian, mm-hmm. wanting to work in hockey. Mm. Like, I already, people, I tell people I'm Colombian. They're like, really? I'm like, what? Oh, are we getting a fire alarm? Oh, that is such a piss off.
These are the vibes though.
This is the worst situation that could have happened in the middle of a podcast. You know what? I'm just going to ride with it. I apologize for any future interruptions. If it's prolonged, we'll stop. But we're going to keep going.
Just keep sending it.
Yeah, we're going to keep going. If anyone's listening and wear headphones, just turn it down a little bit.
Sorry.
No, but yeah, like, we completely disregard what our parents did. And I think that's, I always give credit to my parents a lot. It's like, people are like, what do you credit as the most, the biggest part of your life? I'm like, yo, my parents deciding to move to this country back when I was five, bro. Yeah, like,
with a suitcase and a dream, bro.
Yeah, and like, you know, we lived in a basement apartment in Mississauga for 2 years and it, like, ate off a fucking cardboard table with like a drape on it. Like, you know, like immigrants, no, but like, again, it's a different struggle though. And like, I don't think it discounts what we go through. Mm-mm. You know, they struggle to get us
that's
here.
A good point.
Now we're struggling to make our way. So our kids and future generations of people who look and sound like us can be successful in this field with hopefully less issues like that, right? Mm-hmm. So I love that part of your story. We're going to redirect the plane because we took a little bit of we redirected for turbulence, but we're going to come back to that. back to Darby. One thing you guys do really well and that I really like is you guys have really good relationships with the athletes. Mm-hmm. And I think that is such a very unique thing for a publication. Athletes can hate the media. They're at least the big media, like the TSNs or the SportsCenter, ESPN, like, very wary of it. But you're having these cover stories with guys like Jonathan Osorio and girls like Janine Becky and talking about their story and getting really in deep with them. What does it take to kind of develop those relationships and then be able to tell their stories in that, for lack of a better word, intimate setting?
Yeah, no, I feel like with that is just literally, just as I was saying, it was hard because I was black and young, but like, that also genuinely helped me because like I remember the first baller that ever showed me love was Ashton Morgan. It was 20.
That's a goat.
He literally is. Shout out to Sonder. If you ever want some coffee in Toronto, Sonder.
I think Lucas mentioned that in the last podcast episode.
Yeah, man.
He's opened up his own coffee shop.
Yeah, he's opened up his own coffee shop. Him and Lambs, Liam Frazier. He was just like, he kind of saw me just like shooting, and like, I shoot very differently. I feel like, not very differently, but like, I just like don't care about, like, you'll always see like the photographers, especially the OGs, like with their monopods and their big lenses,
the old boys.
And they're always in the corner, and I'm just like, usually just, I just hover. So it was like pregame, I remember, and I was like by the benches. Wasn't supposed to be there, but like, I was just there, and I wasn't causing anybody no problems. And Ash came over and he's like, oh, what are you shooting? And we just chopped it up. And I feel like they don't, like, he wouldn't have done that if I was a 50-year-old
white dude.
Yeah, white dude. But like, I was just a young guy that he'd seen there all season, you know, like all of the other ballers. Even like I've shot the NBA, and I shot when Minnesota, when D'Angelo Russell was here, I was shooting pregame, and I remember he like did a double take, and he looked at my fit, and he looked at my sneaker, and he's just like, and I was like, you know, like it's little things
game
like
recognized game, yeah. Bro.
So it's like I feel like it's just like I don't try and do too much. Two, like these guys are humans, and I know that they're humans, you know.
People forget athletes are just really, really good at their sports, but they're just like,
they're just like us, bro. So it's just like, I just treat them as such. And it's like, you know, they ask for a photo. I'll be like, sure, bet. Here you go. How you doing? Like, I'll like ask them like, oh, yo, that game was crazy. Like, you must be tired. Like, I don't really give, like, it's just like,
you're not fanboying.
Literally. Yeah. So I feel like that's how we built those relationships. And now it's like gotten to the point where like people, especially like in the soccer, Canadian soccer world, and we're getting now into like into American, two people now know us as like kind of safe people that like, we don't care about stats. We're never going to like, well,
you're not looking for a scoop. You want to tell a genuine story.
Yeah. Like I'd much rather hear about what you did the day after the game than like what that goal felt like. It's cool. I'll have that photo, but like, I'd rather know how you decompress. I'd rather like, you know, just like chill stuff like that. Those in between moments, you know, that's what I care about. And I feel like ballers notice that and know that it's like not coming from like a malicious intent. Cause again, Mitch, who I shouted out to from, who got me like my first gig, he's on Darby now. And he always says it. He's like, dude. And he works for, I'm not going to say where he works. Actually, he works for CPL. And he's like, dude, it's always crazy to different in interviews that he gets when he's working for CPL versus when he's working for Darby.
I think because Darby's for the culture.
Yeah, like, literally.
It's about the football culture. That's why, like, you want to talk to, you know, Fonzie about what his off day routine is, going shopping for a fit for the weekend.
For real.
Because that's part of the brand that you guys have built versus like,
I know how important, you know, that is, bro. Hey, soccer game is cool,
Fonzie,
too.
You had like two missed crosses and you absolutely blew a goal opportunity. Like, what's going, like, you're not doing,
he already knows.
And I think athletes these days, both men and women, are so much more in tune knowing that your personal brand is just as important as what you do. Everything you put on social and you put online about what you're doing off the field is just as important for landing you sponsorships, for opening up your brand as a personal human, also just like stuff after the sport. So I love the fact that you've been able to build those relationships. And I love the story that you talked about Ash and D'Lo seeing you and kind of giving you props. Mm-hmm. Again, I relate
literally
to
not even, they hadn't, I don't know if Ash had seen my photos. I know D'Angelo never seen my photos in his life, but it's like just little things like that.
They saw someone who looked like them.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Like for me, and I haven't really talked about this, but just to give you some insight, like why I relate, and I love kind of bouncing back about with my experiences. So I managed to get in touch with Oso about 2 years ago. I shot him a DM on Instagram saying, hey, I love your game. I've been following you for a while. I'm also Colombian. He's also Colombian. And I'm like,
shout out to all my Colombians.
Yeah. And I said to him like, hey man, like if you ever need content, let me know. And he got me out. I shot a few games for him, took some photos. I think it also, we go back to like the whole thing about your upbringing and being a minority. People in your own circle recognize that and they'll give you props. So I think it's just, your work also speaks for itself. So it's just, I think it's an amalgamation of your work and your upbringing and putting yourself in visible situations. Also, you sneaking around on the sidelines, like you're that's kind of like the idea of like, now, don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness.
Oh yeah, it's way easier. And I always ask for forgiveness.
You know, I think putting yourself in an awkward, uncomfortable situation to get the shot or even get into a position where a guy like Ashton Morgan will come to you and say something to you, at the end of the day, you could have gotten kicked out of the game, but you built that connection and in full circle, it allowed you to build Darby to what it is. And I think that's awesome. You guys have three issues so far, correct?
No, we have. So it's weird. Ryan, it's the design talk of Ryan. We have four issues. So we have issue 0, issue 1, issue 2, issue 3.
Okay. And what's the kind of overarching goal here? How many issues, like, you know, how often do you guys want to drop issues? What's the kind of end goal? When do you guys want to, is this kind of going indefinitely? Do you guys want to stop at some point?
What's Darby
kind of,
forever.
Darby forever.
Darby forever. Like so with Darby, it's a passion project, you know, that is growing into more than that. So like in a perfect world, we would come out with two magazines a year, but at the end of the day, we all have 9-to-5s and are working. So like that's hustle. Just like not feasible. So we do once a year, and that'll be forever. And well,
until whatever.
But like I said with Darby, it's more than just the magazine. We've done a documentary. We're doing an art gallery in November too. One in Toronto, one in Vancouver. We've
have an event this coming weekend.
Yeah, we've sold a football stool. We make no sense what we're doing. We just like want to have
throw
fun.
Shit at the wall and see what sticks.
Exactly,
and like, enjoy it.
Exactly. So, I don't know what the question was. I don't remember it, and I don't know if I answered it.
No, but you 100% did. Kind of was how you're doing, how often you're doing, and how long you. I love the fact that every time you release an issue, it's kind of like an event. Mm-hmm. You guys throw a little community shindig. Yeah. You have people, you know, you have one this weekend. So I love the fact that there also conjoined community events to this, but no, and it's exciting to see that like you want to do this for as long as possible. And mm-hmm. I also, you know, I knew you had a full-time gig, but I didn't know everyone else. I didn't know. So it's also really interesting to hear that so many people pitching into this on
yeah,
their
it's not just me.
On their weekends. Yeah, you can go on your website. I looked up yesterday while doing the research. Was like, you guys have a huge list of contributors. Like, it's like doing this all on the side. It's like, you know, me doing this podcast on YouTube, like you're committing time to it after the fact. And that makes it even more impressive to where you guys are now. Moving forward, shifting gears here. You've obviously gotten to cover a lot of events. 365 days ago, roughly, you got almost to shoot the biggest mm-hmm. event in professional sports. Mm-hmm. You got to do, and I'm going to quote one of the first podcasts I did. You got to do what 0.00001% of the population could ever wish to do, and that's photograph a FIFA World Cup.
Yeah.
You were in the ground in Qatar. You were with the Canadian team. What was, you know, before I get into any of that, what was that like for you to, from where you started at Ryerson shooting the men's sports team to bugging the hell out of the Wake and the Red people all the way to the biggest tournament on planet Earth? What was that experience like?
It was crazy, bro. Like I can't even lie. Like it was, and I feel like it's only really hitting me now that like, especially like that the 1 year's coming up of it, which is fried that like it's been a year, but it was just like years of hard work, you know, years of like people like clowning me for like buying in and going all in on football. People like my parents, even not clowning me, but my parents just being parents.
You sure you want to do it?
Yeah. Like I remember when finally, because like with the World Cup, it's not just a thing of like
you apply for credentials.
Yeah, you don't. You can't apply for credentials like a TFC game or like even the local Canada soccer game. You can like no. You have to kind of go and put yourself out there. So it was like, I remember I was trying to go for MLS as like their MLS Canada guy. I was trying to go for Canada Soccer. I was trying to go for a bunch of people I was reaching out to. And I remember when like Canada Soccer was like, no, we want to bring you on. Cause they were my last hope. I had nothing else. Like all my other, like it was Sportsnet, MLS or Canada Soccer. That was like how I was like, this is the only way I can get in. And Sportsnet, that was a no early. Shout out to them though. MLS, they only could get one photographer in. Shout out to Devin. He's a crazy photographer, Devin Lamoureux. He got to shoot like everything.
Yeah, I actually just saw him on another podcast.
Yeah,
about
man,
this.
He's yeah. That's my dog. So when I got like the Canada one, it was super special too because then I was like. Like I've been doing this and been working with the guys and working in and out with Canada Soccer for years. So like being able to go out there and like I said, like I shot Lucas McNaughton for U of T and then he was practicing with the guys. Mm-hmm. Liam Fraser is like my dog and he was there. Like also my dog was there, you know, like Kamal Miller, like Dane, like Donnell, like
guys,
all of those guys are like
guys from the community.
I feel like people see like, oh, the brotherhood thing and they think it's a joke, but like it's not.
These
like,
guys grew up together.
And they treat that like me too. Like I'm part of that brotherhood to them.
That's awesome.
It's not like the brotherhood is strictly the 22 or 23 man roster. It's every person involved in that. So being part of that was crazy. I remember Like I got, I got when we were there, it was just fried, man. It was just like the first game, match day minus one, we did a walkthrough of the stadium. And I was doing, like, when I was there, I was doing more than just photography. I was, like, for Canada Soccer. I was, like, I was part of their community department, like, their comms department. Like
other duties as assigned.
I was a part-time security guard for Fonzie. I was a part-time, like, I was a part-time translator. And my French is un petit peu en français, but I could speak a little bit, like.
I'm still at the part where you were going to put your body on the line for Fonzie if you got run up on.
Literally, bro. So I was doing so much, so it was like crazy. And I remember we were doing that walkthrough of that first stadium. And I remember they were just like, try and get like a very good clip of someone. And I was like, it has to be Atiba. So I was following Atiba, and like, I have a good relationship with Atiba as well. And I remember I have the video, I'll show you it after. And it's literally him, like, we're walking through the tunnel and he looks back at me and he's like, it's time. And like, you know, Atiba in his like, okay, like skinny Slenderman, like big, like just like his aura. He looked back at me and I just had to do everything in my power to be like, oh, I'm working here. I can't respond as like a friend or as someone. And then we just walk through and it's just,
it opens up.
And I was like, holy cow.
Was that your like welcome to the World Cup moment, or was there another moment that like
every single time, every single thing was a welcome to the World Cup moment there. Like the training facility experience, that was a welcome to the World Cup. The game day experience, that was a welcome to the World Cup. The place we're staying at, the team hotel, the like Souqua Keef, which is like the, it's like, I'd say it's like the St. Lawrence Market. It's like the main
market,
like, common area, yeah, 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 for people. Like everything. I got to see Brazil play. Like I got to like go to a game as a fan.
That's crazy.
To a World Cup.
You know? That's another, that's a whole other bucket list item, is to go see a game, a World Cup game,
yeah,
as a fan.
Because it's different when we're shooting. And I'm sure you know of it too, where when you're shooting it, you don't really, you'll be like, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. That happened. You know, that was cool. Or like, it hurts me that I missed it, but the Fonzie goal where against Panama, where he ran down the line, like all the
homies, I was at that game as a fan.
Yeah, all the homies were shooting there, and like I know it's like they know how cool it was, but you don't know
the impact,
how cool it was, and like you don't know because you're shooting, your eyes are, you're locked in, you know. So it was like really crazy to be able to go and watch Brazil of all teams in the World Cup. So. Yeah, no, it was just like an insane experience. And again, being one of the only, like being one of the younger ones in that World Cup as like a media, being one of the only black ones out there as well. It was crazy.
That's unbelievable, man. Like you've lived the dream of like 95% of sports, yeah, photographers, creatives.
Olympics next, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, not that far. If you make it to the World Cup, you can make it to the Olympics, you know? It's, dude, such an unbelievable experience that I know that, you know, so many people probably saw and thought like, this guy's living the dream. Do you have any particular memory from one of the games that you shot? I know obviously wasn't the result that anyone wanted for Canada, but still a historic moment for us to be there as a country. Any like specific memory or maybe a favorite shot or photo that you've had from that experience that you're kind of maybe one day put in a photo book or hang up? Just what, do you have a specific memory or a specific, you know, frame that you shot that really sticks out to you?
Frame wise, no, I'm not really happy with the photos that that I made throughout that trip. I feel like I have a few that I really like. Like that's a lie. I have a few that I really like, but overall, I wasn't like stoked with it. The first goal that we ever scored with Fonzie, where he celebrated, I missed that because the crane camera got into my way. So I was gutted by that.
It's not the ref this time.
No,
it's
the goddamn crane. It was so frustrating.
Oh, fuck.
But I'd say there was a photo of Kamal, Alistair, and I think Richie singing the national anthem, and Kamal's crying.
Chills.
But like yelling, like you know, and kind of like it goes back to what I was saying, where like you don't realize like what's happening sometimes when you're shooting. You're just in it. I never realized that Kamal was crying. I posted the photo on Instagram, on my own Instagram, and then on like Twitter, and it like people were just like, yo, this is crazy. This is crazy. This is crazy. And I'm like, what? And then someone was like, someone finally like posted, they're like, Kamal's crying. And I was like, wait, he's crying? And I like was like, oh my God, like he's crying. And like that's probably my favorite photo. I also have one of Atiba at the end of our final game, where kind of he was just giving his final speech, and like kind of like you said, it wasn't the outcome any of us wanted, but we can all like everyone left with pride. But my favorite part was the first game, against Belgium, because we got into that and it was like we were in BMO Field times like 1,000.
Damn, bro.
There were Belgian fans, but you couldn't hear them, bro.
Bro, that's wild.
And I was sitting right by the Belgian bench with their media team and everything. And I remember that this will not stop us.
We're going to go until we have to go.
I remember that during the Belgium game, at the beginning, it was just Canada, Canada, Canada. And I look back at the Belgian like team and they're like, wait, 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 we're Belgian, we come late. And I was like, fam, we're not letting up. And for the entire game, we didn't hear them, the Belgian fans. Even when they scored, it got out like yelled at by the Canada chants. So that was my favorite moment. The Kamal photo was probably my favorite photo, just because like now looking at it and like talking to him about it too, like because he's another one of the guys on the team that I have like a good relationship with, is like, it's crazy that I was able to like capture that moment for him.
I'm sure he'll literally never probably has that photo saved on his on every single like device he has, put it up on his wall. I want to before we shift gears here away from the World Cup, because we could talk about this like all day. You mentioned the fact that like as photographers, as creatives, sometimes we don't realize what we're doing. You're blacked out, you're in the moment, you're making sure you're getting the shot. Did you ever just look up from your camera? And I did this at the Stanley Cup final. I gave myself 30 seconds of leeway. I looked up and I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. Did you ever give yourself that minute or 30 seconds during a match to kind of just soak in that you're at the biggest tournament on planet Earth and you're getting to shoot teams like Belgium with superstars that we grew up and watch on TV every Sunday or every Saturday? Do you ever give yourself that moment of leeway to be like, I made it? Or were you just dialed in the whole time and like didn't realize until you got home?
No, I definitely tried to make a point of it, especially every game. It's just like try, especially like when the ball was in the other end, just like try and just like put my camera down, not worry about filing anything, and just like watch. You know, or for me, it was like the walkouts, because so much was happening. And because we were with the team photographer, I was the team Canada photographer, one of the two. We had kind of priority, even if we were like, cause like we had the main station, but then since we were still like, there was two of us, me and Bo, like even like they would make sure that we were centered. So like I was able to like really like I would pop off, but then like moments of Oh Canada, those would be like the ones where like I would like, all right, you know,
we're here.
I'm here. And like I'm not a very patriotic person, but like those are the moments for me. And not to say that in a bad way.
No, but just it's also just like, you know, you're that's even for the players. Like I remember on Twitter and watching the games on TV. Like that's when you felt it, when you hear that anthem. Like that's for the players. They're there for the country. They're there representing 31 million people weight on their shoulders, like carrying them.
Yeah.
Like and I'm sure like I get chills like during the anthems at any sports game. It's just something about it. It's something about it. That's awesome. Any other memories that you want to touch on can be off the field stuff, can be just you meeting someone, another photographer that you thought was dope. Like any other experiences from the World Cup you want to talk about?
Yeah. It's not even meeting, other photographers. I met a bunch of photographers and bumped into some, like, especially some old heads too, that it was cool to like hear them, and they were like, it's kind of crazy, and I hope I don't ever get to this. They're like, oh, this is my fifth World Cup. This is my, I got the Olympics.
You do the math, and you're like, you've been doing this for a long fucking time.
Yeah, I'm like, what the heck? I'm like, that's goals, but I hope I never sound like, they made it sound like they were tired of it, bro. No,
bro, you never.
Bro, the coolest part, okay, I have two stories. The coolest part about it was they had, so for they had like this media center, and it was like, at like convention center, like what's the big convention center in Toronto?
The Metro Convention.
Yeah, it was like that, but just for like media.
I've heard about this.
And bro, there was like food, which you had to pay for, which sucked. But there was like also like Nikon, Sony,
nice.
and Canon. Shout out to Nikon, all my Nikon shooters. Oh, I know, see a lot
Nikon
of
guys.
I see a lot of slander from you and from everybody else.
Yo, it's like me being a Liverpool
smack.
Fan. You didn't tell me.
Come on,
jeez.
Come on.
Yo, no, you're taking bangers on a Nikon. I can respect.
Come
that.
On, bro. But they had we literally had Liberty, and again, I had extra Liberty because I was like the team Canada photographer, but to use any gear.
That's awesome.
So I
heard about this. I saw it on Twitter that y'all had access to everything.
Bro, I was, there was one game I had a 400. I had like three top of the line bodies. Like one of them was the rental, and then like the other ones were mine. I had like the 24, everything.
Kids in a candy shop.
Everything. And free 99. So that was cool. But my favorite non-soccer part of it really was, I met this security guard. At the time, I thought he was just a security guard. And when I first got there, my pass for some reason wasn't ready. So while all the other guys, like the media guys, were able to go, like the Canada soccer team were able to go in there and prep their gear and everything, I usually had to wait like 30 minutes to an hour for them to, because again, it's the World Cup. You can't just like, even though I'm on Canada soccer's roster.
Don't just get to waltz in.
They're not letting you in, bro. They're not letting, even if like JD or Oso or like Fonzie came out and was like, he's with us, still not getting in.
Yeah.
So I'd have to wait out there, and there was this one security guard, and every single time, like, because I was waiting on the side of the road in Qatar, bro.
It's heat down, and that's their winter, bro.
That's their winter, fam. Won't even get
that's
into
a whole
that.
Other story.
Won't even get into that. But he would always like bring me out his like portions of his lunch, portions of his food, water, like tea, everything. And then he was like, before you leave, make sure you come. I want you to come and experience what like Qatar really is like.
That's nice.
So I got to go to his place. I won't say his name just for I don't know if he wants that.
That's fair.
We went to his place, and bro, he lived in a mansion.
Oh no.
And it was just so great though, because like we were there, and it was me, Bruce, and Bo, and we were there, and then it was him and his homies, and none of them else could speak English. So we were just watching, and it was crazy. He had the Portugal game on. He brought like he brought a spread, bro. And we just sat there for an evening in Qatar, just watching football, talking with the homies, and like really getting to like, you know,
the culture,
experience the culture, eat food, like authentic food. We were all eating as authentic as we could, but a lot of burgers were consumed.
That's not a bad thing.
A lot of chicken burgers were consumed just to be safe for our stomach too, because like wanted to try all the lamb and all that stuff, but I also didn't want to.
You don't want to
like,
be sick on a game day.
Destroyed.
I think that's awesome though, and it really speaks to soccer and sport being that universal language, mm-hmm. that even though his homies didn't speak a lick of English, and you definitely
we all sued.
Yeah, like. you know, even though you didn't speak their language either, like you guys were just bonding mm-hmm. over football. And I just love that whole fact, and that you got to experience the culture of being in another country. And I think that's definitely like for me knowing that. And like, if I ever have the opportunity to go somewhere like that, shoot an event, like that's a huge part of it.
You definitely will, bro.
It's just a stranger too. Who's like a security guard. I love that story. Last World Cup thing. Did you get to shoot any of the other games? Not at all.
No, that was the only thing that really freaking sucked for some reason. Because, like, team photographer had its perks until then. Because I
was
like,
you're not for an outlet, you're not for a media.
Yeah, which like makes no sense. Mm-hmm. I guess it does make sense. But like, yeah, no, it makes no, for me, it makes no sense. Cause it's like, what's the difference of me shooting this versus like any other, like the Toronto Star photographer shooting the Brazil game? You know, there's no Canada ties to that. But that one really sucked because I really had some games that I wanted to shoot. I wanted to shoot a lot of the African countries, obviously. Obviously, I wanted to shoot Brazil. I wanted to shoot Ronaldo. I'm not a Messi fan. Like, I'll admit that.
No, we're ending this podcast, bro.
I'll admit that.
Are you a Ronaldo over Messi guy?
Yeah, 100%. Okay. I'll admit that Messi, like, because he has the World Cup, has one on him, like, that's on fair. Paper. But, like.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, episode. We don't have enough time. But yeah.
No, I mean, hey, you know what? You got to experience something that, again.
I got to shoot the World Cup.
You got to shoot the World Cup. And I'm sure down the line, like, you know, we have the one coming in North America in 3 years.
Coming up soon.
And also, I know you don't want to be like the guy who's been like, I've been to 5 World Cups. But, you know, you've been to one. You have the work and you have the footprint and the path to then again now go shoot the next 4 or 5 World Cups. So mm-hmm. I'm sure it won't be long until you're shooting other teams and capturing the moments. But also, again, like even just doing it for Canada Soccer is a dream for a lot of people.
Yes. Thank you, Canada Soccer.
Yeah, shout out Canada Soccer. A couple of people there obviously giving you the door in from the start. And that's a great lesson on just building a relationship down like exactly. Early on building the relationship. And then I was going to ask you, like, you know, what would you say to a young creative who would want to shoot the World Cup one day? But I think we've already talked about it. You have to develop the relationships and just foster them, put the work in, and make sure you're present. And then mm-hmm. that's kind of how you got there, right? So I'm not going to ask that question because we've kind of already gone over it. I want to shift gears here to the...
Do the work.
Shift gears here to your actual photography.
Yeah.
And I just love the way your photography... It's you said it earlier, you have a very unique style of photography. If anything, I would describe it maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, like photojournalism, photo documentary, like yeah. You're fly on the wall. You're not doing, you do action photos, but you're I would say your best work is capturing just like, you know, the guy crying during the anthem, uh-huh. the documentary side of the capturing the real life energy and moments in it. How did you develop your photography style over the years?
I feel like, it's been like just a number of little things. Like I shot for a wedding photography company. I've done like over like 80 weddings. So that I feel like just that gave me that aspect of like really trying to, because the guy I was shooting for, he was like, we want to capture everyone's emotions, not just like the bride and groom's emotions, but we want someone to see this. And like, we want, whether it's like a kid walking down the aisle or someone walking, he's like, I want there to always be feeling. So I feel like I took that a lot from him.
You are the second sports photographer who has said that wedding photography has helped them develop their
skills. Yeah, I hate it though. Like, I will only do like wedding photography for like the closest homies. Friends. Like I shot one this summer for the homie, but like the editing is the worst, bro.
As someone who does wedding films on the side, I feel you.
Oh my God, no. But yeah, I feel like I just really don't care about the action as much. Like, obviously I want to get a bicycle kick if someone gets a bicycle kick.
Yeah.
But you know what's even better than the bicycle kick? The reaction of that homie afterwards, bro, because they don't know what the frick to do, bro. Like, they don't know how to react. They just did something that, like...
defines physics.
It don't matter. Like, Lewandowski, it don't matter. Every time he would score a bicycle... Like, he scores a bicycle kick to him, he's going to act like it's the first time because it's such a crazy feat. And that reaction is way better.
100%.
And, like, one thing I always find myself doing and one thing I always tell, like, people who ask me is I'm like, when you see other people, like, putting their camera down and chimping, keep shooting.
What do you mean by?
Like you know, usually, like, there's a goal kick and, like, or, like, a corner kick and, like, the player's walking to the corner.
Oh, and they kind of take it as a
wall. And everyone's like, okay, let me see what I got from, like.
No, keep shooting.
Keep shooting. That's, like.
It's the moment before the big, like, the highlight and the moment after that often are the big moments.
And, I think it's those things that I look for and just, like, little weird things, like if someone has a tattoo or if someone has
details,
has like, yeah, has wristband on them and there's something on there, I want to capture that, you know. Like earlier this a couple weeks ago, I shot a Whitecaps game and Sam Adekube was wearing a shirt at the end that said RIP so-and-so. And I remember I could see him from a little bit of a ways that it had something. So I started shooting it and everyone was still like had their head down and all the other photographers were like just talking amongst each other, most of the other guys. So I kept shooting, And then finally I got a decent photo of it. But like he ended up reposting it and then one of his homies reached out to me and was like, bro, thank you. That was for my dad. And like, oh, he's like, man. I didn't think anyone else. I wasn't sure if anyone was even going to get it. Cause Sam, like obviously like the goal was Sam scores and then he probably wanted to like show it off, you know? So it's like stuff like that. Like when everybody else is like head down, that's when I really want to shoot. Like literally sometimes I'll be talking when the play is coming to me because I'm like, I don't care about like them dribbling. Cause it's going to like, our camera shoot like 5,000 frames per second. So I'm going to get them dribbling anyways. It's the in-betweens that I think are really cool. To get, you know?
Yeah, I love that. As someone who shoots a lot of documentary style work and, mm-hmm. you know, like I do very similar style, I think so many people are focused on getting the banger. Yeah, you know, the moment as the ball is kicked, the selling's great. It's always, I talked to Lucas and he's like, you know, emotion sells. Emotion, mm-hmm. emotion brings people in and gets likes and gets engagement. But I love the fact that you take the moments in between and you turn them into a moment of, whether it's elation, frustration, focus, I think those are really powerful moments, and it takes a special eye. Like you said, you're shooting when everyone's camera is down, and there's an old saying but something I've always heard is like, if everyone's shooting here, go over here and get the shot that no one else is getting. So you're kind of embodying that because while everyone's chatting between the play or looking at their camera, you're getting the shot that no one else is getting, and I think that's what makes your photography, like you said.
That's kind of why I sit where I sit when I shoot, because everyone shoots either like 18 yard box or corner. I'm always at the 6 yard box.
Yeah.
Like I feel like, especially when people score, their reaction is usually right there in front of me. Yeah. You know, whereas like if I'm in the corner, I have to wait for them to turn.
And they might go to the other corner. Yeah. And like you might not get
And I'll just shot. I'll get up and run. Like I don't give a damn. Once like that, once there's a goal celebration, I'm getting up and running.
You're getting the shot no matter
I'm getting
what.
Old now, so I don't do as much. But
one more question when it comes to actually shooting sports gear wise, you're an icon guy,
which yes, would have told me
before the podcast.
Come on.
But you know, what are we shooting with? What's the gear set for you?
Yeah, no. So I'm again, it's very weird and I'm sure you've probably noticed it as someone like who has like an eye for like quality stuff, but like all of my stuff is generally a lot softer than most people. Cause I only shoot on like film lenses.
No way.
Yeah.
Manual focus, all that jazz.
No, they're automatic. I'm not that. I'm
not okay.
That
okay. Crazy. You're not that tough.
I'm not right. that crazy. Right. No. Like I'm a very big convenience guy, but like all of my lenses are like the film ones where I have to like manually put in like what the aperture like max is going to be and all that. And I feel like, cause it just like hits a little bit different. Cause like it's wild, but like I have a 70-200 film lens. I have automatic. I have a 28-70, which is like the film equivalent of the 24-70. Then I have my Nifty 50. I have a 35. I have a Nikon. I shoot on a Nikon D4, which for all you haters is the equivalent of like a, a Canon 1DX.
Yeah.
Like in that range. And then I recently, not recently, it was like 3 years ago, but I don't really use it, switched over to like, I got like a mirrorless, so I have a Z6 II.
Yeah, okay.
But it doesn't usually see a lot of work.
How
then I just recently got this camera for a trip that I'm having in
December.
Is that
what you got, a film camera? Show the camera a little
bit.
Yeah,
look at
this. Got the little, gonna block my eyes so it focuses on it. There we go.
Jeez. But yeah, no, I just got this, cause we're going to South Africa in December. No.
That's
and I'm
awesome, dude.
Shoot a lot of football.
Why don't you like the mirrorless? I'm just curious. Is it like, I feel like so many people, especially in recent years have just transferred to mirrorless because of the weight and the size is so much more convenient. Why aren't you into the mirrorless side of things? I think it's, if it ain't broke, don't fix it with your
other camera. Literally what it is. Yeah. It's just like, I like the whole process of it. I like the sound of it. I like the feel of it. I like the fact that like my 1DX, I've dropped it countless times and never worry.
It's kind of like an athlete where you have like, you've had your cleats.
Tony Cruz and his cleats.
Bro. Yeah, he's bro, you've had them the forever. Boots. It's like, you know, Sidney Crosby in hockey and his jock strap. He's been wearing the same fucking jock as
Holker. That's disgusting.
But it's like, and I think this is a good lesson to photographers.
Nah, that's some hockey shit. That's disgusting.
Hey, you work
the at jock strap?
Yo, that's like, this guy works in hockey now. He's got to get, yo, bro. But it's like,
yeah, actually, yo, I don't want to get Sidney mad and or any of those guys. And they see me because I'm like the only black photographer too. They're like,
you can wear whatever jock you want. No, but I think that's a really good thing to know that for younger photographers. And I think we're in such a weird age of people, you're always being sold to for camera gear. Like, if the camera works for you, if you like the way it shoots, if you like the feel, don't change to a newer system because it's newer. Yeah. You know, you clearly enjoy the system and you've broken it in, you know what you're going to get out of it. So you don't always have to have the latest and greatest. And you're using film lenses. I didn't even know that you're using like vintage glass. Mm. And like, as someone who I shoot a lot on Sony, but I have a lot of Sony glass, whenever I've shot on vintage, it just hits different. So I get it's a little softer, has more character.
Colors look different.
And I also think that's why your photos stand out, not knowing that. I thought it was your editing process, which I'm sure it is a little bit, but now knowing you have vintage glass is such a game. You're the first person I've ever talked to who shoots on vintage glass. So one question before we move on, just because I'm curious, is it, do you need like an adapter to make it automatic?
That's also why I'm having switched to mirrorless full transparency, because the new Nikon mirrorless lenses, the bodies don't have the capability even with a monitor, with a adapter.
Yeah.
I'm the least technical person.
That's fine. I'm not a big gearhead either.
With the Nikon, with my D4 and a D5, I want to get a D5 next. You can just like put any Nikon lens from the past, okay, like since they've started making them. Maybe again, don't quote me on it. Because you know, people camera heads are different.
Oh yeah, they'll come at you in the comments. Yeah,
but I just like it's for me. I like how it doesn't look as digital. You know, it obviously like me, like people always, like my homies always laugh because like your photos are just always soft, bro.
But that's what I like.
Yeah, but like I like that. It's like it kind of humanizes the photo a little bit,
and it makes it stand out. Yeah. Everyone has the same sharp looking photos, and yours are.
Mine are out of focus, baby. Did I miss the shot or did I not miss the shot?
You'll never know. No, I love
usually that. I missed the shot.
Hey, we all miss shots.
Even like I was saying with the how in Qatar, because people might be like, oh, but I thought you got to. I got to use all of the top line of gear, and that Kamal photo was on my 70-200.
That just shows that you can have access to the best stuff in the world, and if it doesn't, you'll still go back to your.
A lot of times, I would be like shooting with like the nice mirrorless, and it's the 300.
We just talked about it with hockey before the podcast. For context, he's shooting for Vancouver as an LSE this year, and you're seeing all these guys with 7200s in the glass. You're like, nah, I'm going to use my 24-70. You're going to stick with what's comfortable, and I think I love that perspective. And I know people clown Nikon all the time, and I clown them.
I just sit there quietly,
No, you're creating unbelievable work with your stuff and with your cameras and the gear you have. And I think it's awesome hearing a different perspective, someone who's not shooting on the latest and greatest, but is using, you know, stuff that's older and stuff that not a lot of people see. So I love that. Moving forward, I want to touch really briefly on your other endeavors. Right now you work for EA as we're FC24. You guys are just calling it FC now. No more FIFA.
No more FIFA. It's all FC.
All right. So
join the club.
You are the FC20. You work for EA as the FC community manager. This guy not only shot a World Cup, but he also works for the game company that we all grew up playing as kids.
It's crazy.
Would end friendships. That would begin friendships.
It's crazy.
How long have you been doing that? What's your kind of, community manager, what do you do with EA and FC24?
So I'm the community manager, and the simplest way of explaining it is I'm the middle person between the people that make the game and the people that play the game. So like,
you're the admin.
Yeah, kind of. I'm kind of the admin. I work with the social team a lot. But I just basically just see what the community is saying, and I work with like our core creators, like the Castros and Zwayback. Like those are kind of like some of the bigger FIFA/FC actually, wait, those are some of the bigger FC.
Gotta stay on brand here.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think my bosses will listen to this, but just in case. Those are some of the bigger FC creators, and just like helping them and seeing what people are liking and seeing what people aren't liking. Then I talk to the devs, and then like the devs will be like, okay, so this is what's coming. And then I'll like host our like Twitch shows,
nice,
and then
nice,
like
nice. We'll
do like little VODs that will be on in the game. And that's the craziest part.
So you're me. Yo, he's EA Sports. You're in the game, bro.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
I don't have FC 24 yet, but like,
what system are you on?
I'm on Xbox.
Xbox One.
Xbox One. Yeah.
All right, I got you.
All right. But like, I didn't even know you were in the game, bro.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
I remember, like, it was
bro,
like,
bro, I'm about to name this podcast "How Tagua Got Into FC 24."
It's
bro.
In the game.
He's in the game.
Yeah,
bro.
No, it's. I remember because the first time it happened when I was like, I was only like 2 or 3 months into the gig. I'm now like 10 months in, I think. And I remember it like, my coworker didn't let me know that it was happening. So we recorded the VOD, and then like part of my job is to play test and make sure and see everything. It's the coolest job in the world, bro.
Bro, you get to play a video game.
I have meetings with my boss where sometimes we're just playing the game and talk. We're like obviously talking about work, but it's like,
it's there. How are we not playing the game?
So yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, but yeah, it's just, I remember, the first time I saw myself in the game, it was like Mbappe, because it was with our last title, and then me. And I was like, what the heck? I'm like, is crazy, this everywhere? Dude. And they're like, yeah. So I'm like, some kid in France is going to see this little brat from Keswick, Ontario. What? That's crazy, bro.
That's so funny. So is that your full-time kind of gig? Is this what's paying the bills?
That's what's paying the bills.
That's
lately.
Awesome, dude. No, that's unbelievable. It's such a different contrast to what you do with Darwin. I think it just shows your multifaceted skill. And also another way to get into the sport and work in the sport that you love. How's your FIFA game from 1 to 10?
I'll body most people.
Okay.
Like I've taken some L's. I'm not one to hide that. Elijah Adekuwe gave me the work because I know if I don't give him the shout for that one, but like for most people, I'll work most people.
Did you give any of the Canada soccer guys?
They don't want the smoke.
They didn't want. You didn't take a PS4 to Qatar.
Dane St. Clair, you've been ducking the smoke. Kamal Miller, you've been ducking the smoke. Who else been? Liam Fraser, you've been silently ducking the smoke.
I'm gonna post this as a reel. It's just you calling out Canada soccer.
Do it, bro. Y'all don't want it. Pro clubs. Ultimate Team, Kickoff, I will give you the work. I will give you the work. And if you beat me, I'm just going to deactivate your game. choose wisely.
Last thing just about EA before we start wrapping up here. How did you find the job? I think that's such a cliche sports question, but you know, this podcast is for people who want to work in the creative aspect of sports, and a lot of them are tuning in because they want to know how you found these opportunities. Was it just an application you saw? Was it word of mouth? How'd you find out about it?
Yeah, no. So I'd been applying to job after job after job at EA. I think I applied to like, I think 3 jobs, and I even for 2 of them, 1 of them I had a really pretty extensive interview process because obviously EA is a massive company, and like they are very meticulous with who they bring in and whatnot. So I applied for like a bunch of different jobs, and then the last one before I got this one, I made it to the final round, and then at the end they were like, oh, we ended up going with someone internal.
Been there.
It's fine.
Blows, but
that's like
it is what it is.
I say that's fine as if I didn't cry, but like, you know,
feel you, bro.
But
rejection's a part of the industry.
Yeah, it's a part of the industry. And then literally, I was in Qatar, and can't believe I said it like that. Honestly.
That's how you're supposed to say it.
But
you sing guitar the whole time.
Yeah.
Qatar.
But I was out there, and I got an email from a recruiter.
No way.
From EA.
It's crazy.
And I was like, wait, what? And so I did the entire interview process again. And that one, they like, when I tell you it's extensive, it was like 6 or 7
that's,
interviews.
Bro, that's wild.
With the time zone. So I was doing interviews from anywhere between like 12 a.m. to like 3 a.m.
Because that's the other side of the world. Dude,
and I didn't want them to.
And you had like a fucking match day the next day. And you're like,
bro, literally, after the, was it Croatia game, the second game? I literally had to rush home. because I had an interview
back to the hotel.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's insane.
But because I didn't want to give them any excuse, and that's like one thing I'll say: never give anyone an excuse to not give you an opportunity.
No, I love that.
So it was like, yeah, I'm in Qatar, and yeah, I could be like, hey, could we do this in like 3 weeks to a month? Because I'm at the biggest event in my life.
They're like, no.
But then that just gives them an excuse to be like, we'll just go with someone else.
So you made it work.
So you make it work, you lose some sleep, and that's kind of...
Long-term, it benefited. You have you're full-time with them?
Yeah.
Yeah, like you have a full-time job, you're working with one of the biggest video game brands in the world. Like at the end of the day, like you lost maybe a few hours of sleep and were a little groggy the next morning. Nothing a coffee can't fix.
Exactly.
So, and at the end of the day, now you're working with EA and you're the community manager and... Dude, you've done so much. And one last thing I'm going to talk about before, again, we wrap up here, because this guy's got a busy schedule. And if this conversation doesn't show, he wears a lot of hats, not just the Derby one. But you also now this season started working with the NHL.
Yeah.
We're distant colleagues in that sense. You are one of our LSEs in Vancouver for the Canucks. Mm-hmm. I remember I hit you up about the opening and threw your name out there, and your work spoke for itself. And now... Not only is he shooting professional soccer, but you're shooting the highest level of hockey in the world. What's season one in the NHL been like? I know we're only in November. It's only been a month. But how has the transition been working in a completely different sport?
Yeah, this is like season one and a half because, again, before I moved to – we didn't really talk about it, but before moving to Vancouver, I was hitting a point where I was shooting both Leafs and Raptors and TFC for MLSE.
Bro, we have to do a whole
part
two episode.
The opportunity that I had at the time was worth it. So this is like year like one and a half, maybe two. It's like my Ben Simmons year. Like no one really like, you know, like I played like four games and then I dipped. But this is it's been calm. It's been really cool because like with hockey, like I was saying, I don't have many reference points, and that might just be ignorantly because I don't like I'm new to the sport ish. So it was like going into it, I was looking at you, I was looking at Blinch, and then I was looking at Thomas. Like I'm gonna butcher his last name, so I'm not even gonna try.
I don't even know how to say his last name, but we know Thomas will hear this and he'll know we're talking.
Yeah,
about.
Shout out to you, Thomas. He's another one that's inspired me for a long time. But yeah, it's been really cool to just shoot it, and like you and everyone that has been part of like the Canucks has just been like, we just want you to shoot how you shoot it. So it's been like how you shoot stuff, sports, because it's a little bit different the way, obviously. So it's been like really fun to just kind of navigate. It's been really cold. Like that's been the biggest challenge of figuring out, because it's cold until it's not, until I have to go to like the suites to shoot something, and then I have to come back down.
You're sweating because you're running all over the place. Yeah.
But no, it's been really fun to kind of just like shoot something that isn't like for like soccer for me is now like my life, you know? So like being able to shoot like the hockey game is like a nice pause. It's a nice break. It's a nice, it's a nice kind of just
get a
like
different perspective.
I'm learning. You know,
and that's the best when you get to learn in an environment like that. Yeah. What's the hardest kind of transition for between footy and hockey? Like I know for me, always shooting hockey and then getting to shoot Canada soccer a few weeks ago. It's the pace. Like
I feel like maybe because I've shot hockey before and like I also shot a lot of the Ryerson hockey. Ryerson hockey. So like I feel like because of that, and I played when I was younger, not at a high level at all, but like I played, so I feel like I have an understanding of it. I feel like it's just like I'm not capturing emotion yet. You know, I don't know those moments. Like even with the goals, like I'm not happy with how I'm capturing those yet, like the celebrations. So that has been the part, and I feel like that is just because I've been so far removed from hockey and the sport that like capturing the emotions and getting that part, because the pacing I don't have an issue with at all, really.
That's usually what it is most people. It's like, oh man, it's fast, but
it's really fast.
But I love the fact that you're trying to adapt the whole concept of capturing those in between moments to hockey and that you're learning through it. I think that's a really, really cool thing to hear from my perspective as someone who shoots it pretty frequently. Yeah. Mm.
So yeah, no, that's been like the hardest part, just being able to like capture the game how I like to capture sports has been the hardest thing.
That's awesome.
But with time,
Yeah, no, everything comes with time and, like, you know,
and reps.
Your work, when I remember when I sent it towards the people who hired his way, I'm like, hey, like, go look at his work. He shot a World Cup, and I'm sure and you've adapted really well. I've seen your stuff, and I think it's great. I'm not a photographer primarily. I do mostly video, so it's awesome to see someone as talented as you venture into other sports. And like you said, it's kind of like a breath of fresh air. Like, same with me. Like, I shoot hockey all the time, but I'm working with UFC athletes. I'm doing footy here and there, and like, it's just a nice.
It's nice
change to have. Of pace, right?
Exactly,
and it's nice to diversify your work and get other stuff under your belt. Segueing into this, you have a crazy calendar, as far as I'm aware. Mm-hmm. Today, we're obviously shooting this at, it's now 11:30, or almost 11:30. We have 15 minutes to go here. We had to shoot this really early because you got a stacked day ahead of you. You're here in Toronto for a few days. You have an event on the weekend. Mm-hmm. But, you know, from everything you do with Darby to your job with EA to what you're doing with the NHL and everything else you might be doing in between in your life, obviously, work-life balance and scheduling mm-hmm. and being organized is such a big thing. As someone who wears as many hats as you, how do you manage to stay on top of all your work and all your responsibilities across all your kind of, you know, places you work and you do creative work in?
Yeah, honestly, I don't do well at it. Like, I'm not gonna sit here and lie to people and be like, I've learned a lot though, and I feel like I'm getting better. But like, it's hard because like you said, I'm doing quite a bit, and I enjoy it. Like, you know, I need to be doing stuff or else it's not good. Like,
yeah.
Like,
you don't like to sit still.
Like, it was funny. I was watching the UFC fight recently, and like, I remember Volkanovski after his loss, and he's like, got a big gash there. He's like, but I need to stay active. I don't do well when I'm just sitting there. I was like, I feel that because it's like, I just always need to be doing something.
Yeah.
Or else I'm like, what is going on here? So, yeah, no, it's hard. I use Trello now. Shout out to, I know Ryan, he's going to be mad because I'm going to give my coworker at EA props for it because Ryan tried to get me onto it before, but I didn't listen. But Trello from Sheldon, he put me onto that. That's changed the game.
What's Trello? Give us a little
401. It's just literally like this thing where like it's, you can put, it's like a bunch of virtual sticky notes and you can put like different like categories. So you can put need to do, needs approval, done, pending. And then you just like boop, 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 plug and play.
Kind of like a work board.
Yeah. Work board. And so yeah, like I'm not, this is probably like a regular thing that most humans do, but I only discovered it like 7 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So just like, yeah, just try and do that. I'm the worst at calendars and stuff like that.
But you make it work.
Yeah, I make it work. And like, it's like, I'm just trying my best.
Yeah. And that's all you can do. One of the last things here, I'm going to go into some rapid fire questions.
All right.
I'm going to say a question. You can, the first thing you come to mind, short answer, long answer, whatever you want. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously we know Canon, Nikon, or Sony. You're obviously,
come on.
If you weren't shooting Nikon, what would you shoot? You'd quit.
No, I'd probably shoot Canon.
Okay. Okay. If you could only use one lens for the rest of your career, what would it be? It can be the focal length. It can be a specific lens, whatever you want to make it.
Could I have two answers for this one? My sure. swaggy answer would be like an 85, just because I feel like that's just enough, you know, where like you can get tight enough. Like I could shoot a soccer game if I needed to on an 85. I would hate it.
And you got that
Not depth, I would hate it, but it would be.
Of field.
Yeah. But it's still wide enough too that like, a player can be like pretty close and I can still capture it with enough in the back, but like 7200 is without a doubt the like the sure
okay.
sure bet.
What's the best gear purchase you've ever made?
The best gear purchase I've ever made was I have this like it's not even like actually a camera, but it's just like an extension cord that I have that I can just like plug everything in and charge and have everything. Cause like
sometimes
in my bedroom only has like three outlets. It's kind of ridiculous. So like that, where I can just plug and play everything, charge up, work up everything, have lights on. I don't know. If it had to be gear though, I don't know. I think that's literally it because like, it's just, I can do so much at the same time. Or never mind.
All right. Yeah. What's the worst gear purchase you've ever made? Or what's, something that you're like, I didn't need this. What the fuck?
What's the worst gear purchase that I've ever made? Probably my mirrorless camera.
Okay. Sometimes it's not the thing. It's not, you think you need it, and you realize you don't fuck with it.
Yeah, I my parents helped me pay for it too. I pay them back fully, but my parents pay for it. Which is why I was like, oh, it's gonna feel weird. But I paid it off. But yeah, I just like don't like it. Like it just feels like I'd rather, if I'm gonna shoot something small, I'd just rather shoot with a little point and shoot like this.
Yeah.
Cause like this feels just as durable as mirrorless to me, and it doesn't feel durable. Mm-hmm. You know, my D4, I can literally throw that off there. And there's like Peter McKinnon, he froze his 1DX, bro.
Yeah.
You can't do that with a mirrorless. No,
that's true.
He literally froze a
original 1DX. Like DSLR, not mirrorless cameras are built different.
Yeah. So nah, actually that my D4 is my favorite actual.
Okay. Gotcha. Mm. What's your biggest photography pet peeve?
My biggest photography pet peeve,
that you do or you notice other people doing.
The homies are going to dog me because I'm probably not even going to say what I'm at, what actually cheeses me, but like I can't think of it.
Come back to it.
Biggest photography pet peeve. People that always tell me to have a lens cap, bro. Like, I don't believe in lens caps. I say that I'm just redundant, but this is just new. This mm-hmm. will be lost. But like, you don't need a lens cap, bro.
All right. Obviously, I think we've touched on this, but dream event to shoot. You've done a World Cup.
Yeah, the Olympics would be something crazy. But I'm going to South Africa in December, and I'm going to get to shoot a lot of like the South African Premier League.
So cool.
So that is going to be crazy, because it's like I'm going to the Orlando Pirates Stadium and I'm going to shoot a game there, and obviously the World Cup games were shot there. I'm going to do a tour of the Kaiser Chiefs Stadium and hopefully shoot some of their training with the team, and do some stuff with them. And then so yeah, I'd say the Olympics is the next Mount Rushmore, obviously 2026 World Cup, because that's home. Because, I've shot one, but that doesn't...
It's different when it's here.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that I automatically am going to get to shoot the next. So, like, that's still up there for me as something that I want to do. And, like, it would be cool to, like... I want to shoot some, like, underwater stuff.
Okay.
Like,
diving or something?
Like, yeah.
All right. I love that.
That could be cool. Or like shooting a like triathlon.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
That's sick.
All right. Great answer. What's the most overdone trend in the sports photography scene?
Oh, we don't have enough time, bro.
Give me one.
I'm trying to be politically correct with this one. I would say... it can be tastefully done, but like a lot of people are using just like these fake flare, light flare things that like I can just tell is fake, which I don't like. Or like there was a time where like people were doing just the craziest stuff with their carousels, their Instagram carousels. Okay. I'm like, I just want to see a good photo. I don't care if stuff is popping out. So that's probably my one thing.
Okay.
Two things.
First camera. We talked about this. It was the
T3 Rebel Canon 2011.
And what's your dream camera?
D5.
All right. Not from that.
D5 would be the dream camera, or a Leica. Obviously, I feel like that's cliche to say.
No, but like, it's true. I like that. Finally, the last question I'm going to ask before we're done here. What is one piece of advice that you would give to a younger photographer, creative individual who may want to follow in your footsteps, whether that's shoot a World Cup one day, start a footy publication, you know, tell stories? What's the number one piece of advice you'd give to someone who wants to get into this line of work?
Yeah, I would say... just try, have fun with it. Like literally just vibe, be you. Because at the end of the day, like that's what people are going to want. Like they're going to want you, and they're going to want your photos or your video or whatever you do. So it's like, just be ready to put in the hours and make sacrifices, because I feel like, you know it too. Like There's been times where we've missed parties because we're shooting a game. It's one thing to miss a party because you're the one that scored the game-winning like goal or the game-winning touchdown. It's another thing when you're like missing it to just photograph it. You know, like there's been many moments where like I missed Skepta his first time here, and that kills me because I shot a Ryerson Rams game. Do I regret it? A little bit, but like it's like maybe I wouldn't have got to shoot some things that I have. So it's like just know that it's worth it and just keep going.
Love that, man. Yeah. What's going on for you before for the next little while? What, any big events you're shooting? Anything you want to shout out? Anyone you want to shout out that you're collaborating with coming up? Like what's going on in the next few weeks or months for you?
Yeah, nah. So we just wrapped up some stuff. Darby just wrapped up some CPL finals coverage. That was dope. Going to South Africa. I'm going to shoot a lot out there. And then just kind of getting ready for Copa America. Hopefully we qualify, getting to shoot that, getting to shoot Canada camps. But yeah, no, I think South Africa is the big one coming up, and then getting ready for next CPL season, getting ready for next, like, I feel like next year is going to be very, very, very busy with CPL, Copa America.
And it's all leading up to the big one in 2026.
Come on. We'll both be there.
Oh, yeah.
Crying.
I've been saying that's my goal to be there in 2026.
BMO Field's going to be bumping.
Oh, yeah. They got to expand that thing, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, I think it's going to get expanded to like 40K or 45. Yeah. I can't remember what the World Cup minimum is.
I think it's like 45. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, where can the people find you? All those links will be down in the description, but where can the people find you on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, whatever you use? What's your handle out there?
Yeah, you can find Darby on Instagram at Darby Mag. You can find it on Twitter at Darby Magazine. Check out our website, darbymagazine.com. You can find me, Shuttersworth, on Instagram, Shuttersworth_ on Twitter. But yeah, nah, follow Darby. Don't follow me because I post like once every
if
like
you want some banger, 4 months. Follow this guy and follow Darby. Your photography is something to definitely be inspired by. Definitely give him a follow. Thank you for coming so early in the morning.
Thank you getting for off waking a red up. Eye.
I appreciate you coming on the show, my guy.
Thank you, brother.
Everyone, like I said, give him a follow. Everything will be on
Nikon. Nikon.
That does it for episode 11 of the Sports Creators Showcase. We're signing off. Peace.